Welcome to the Audible Ecstasy Podcast. Each week we sit around and discuss the music from our past. Sometimes we agree.
I call it iconic. It's a 10. That riff is it's incredible.
Clearly a 10. This is one of the most iconic songs of the 80s.
Iconic from start to finish.
And sometimes we disagree.
The song sounds like something you might hear at your aunt's funeral.
The absolute worst lyrics ever.
With the juvenile flush on that one, I'm not dealing with that. I'm not dealing with that crap.
Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
All right, guys, we are back with another Audible Ecstasy podcast, ringing out the new year with our first review. It's my pick. It's Black Sabbath, The Mob Rules. And we have a special guest, Jesse, coming in with our first episode this year to help us out with a little Black Sabbath. Boys, y'all ready to do this today?
Ready to do it, man. Good to have you on board, Jesse. All right, yes. Anthony, let's hear your tagline. I know you got a good one for the opening of the
If
season
you
here.
Listen to fools, the Audible Ecstasy podcast rules.
That's right.
That's right. Pretty good. I like it, man.
Because we're
I like it.
Three amigos of fooldom.
Yes.
Yes. All right, boys and girls. Well, I say let's get this thing rocking. First song, Turn Up the Night. Hit it, Chris. So Turn Up the Night, first song on the Mob Rules, second album with Ronnie James Dio at vocals. And if you didn't know any better what's getting ready to come, you would say, man, that's a killer opening tune. The riff is contagious, easy to sing along, get your head bobbing. Great vocal performance from Ronnie James Dio. And you get the benefit of some absolute killer guitar work from Ione. And this starts off in this song and it continues throughout this entire album. And we're not used to that because the Ozzy days, he really didn't solo a tremendous amount. So I feel like this is, and it also, let me throw this out there, Geezer Butler playing the bass like a madman. It's like a bass solo throughout the whole song. I think this is a fantastic way to start the album off. I love this song. I think it's outstanding work by these three guys. I start this off with a 9. Chris, what are your thoughts?
So we didn't talk about this beforehand. Let's let Jesse go second, and I'll go third, and Anthony fourth. That work for you guys, since he's already.
Okay, that's
Jesse
always today. That's fine.
Always
yeah.
Always like it in the rear anyway, so that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course you do.
Fro is going to take it in the back, so let's go to. All right, Jesse, what are your thoughts on Turn Up the Night, my friend?
Well, this is probably one of my favorite Black Sabbath songs. I'm never been the hugest Sabbath fan, but. Like growing up in the era that we did, y'all are a few years older than me, but it's almost default that you're a Sabbath fan if you're into, heavier music. But this song is just so different. Like when you hear this compared to like the Sabbath albums you're normally used to hearing, like Paranoid and stuff like that. This song is just a rocker, man. It shreds from the start. Like it's a good opening track. And I mean, you're one verse in, dude, and Tony Iommi's doing a mini solo already. Like during the chorus. Like the backing part of the chorus is like a mini solo, and then the real solo, it's righteous, man, my goodness. And then the drums are just solid, like Vinny Appice is on it, like he's a good drummer. So I mean, to be honest with you, I gave this one a 10, and this is one of the rare tracks where I'm like, 10 is too low for this, but that's
nothing wrong with that, man.
Yeah.
I was torn, Jesse. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought it was, I almost went 10. I thought, well, no, I think there's definitely a 10 on here, but I felt like this was just a hair behind that tune. So yeah. I'm with you. I can't argue that score at all.
Yeah. And wow. I've got a few I scored, probably lower than, lower than you guys would have, but for this one, it's just off the charts. I love this song.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. All right, Chris, what are your thoughts? Turn Up the Night.
Yeah, don't worry about the low scores, Jesse. I got your back when it comes to that.
Oh, God. Of course you just do. Kidding. Well, here we go.
This, you know, I'll tell you, when I listened to this one, it kind of gave me like a Judas Priest kind of vibe to it, the way the, I don't know if it's just kind of the way the chorus goes on it, or the, just everything really.
Could Ronnie be that decade of like music.
I definitely think it is. Definitely with you on the rocking guitar. And I was noticing just in the headphones, listening to that back, the bass guitar is very prominent on this song. Like you said, Jimmy, I mean, it's just like, he just kind of goes off on that.
Oh, geez.
So for my knowledge, you guys know Sabbath better than me. Tommy and Geezer, are they the founders of this band?
That's half of the other guys, original Sabbath.
Because I read Vinny was this is his first album with them too, right?
That's okay. Correct.
I give it an 8. I think it's an excellent way to start the album. I don't know the history like you guys do on this. I'm not sure what's considered iconic and what have you. I just know what sounds good and what I like.
That's all it matters.
But I think it's an excellent way to start the album, so I give it an 8.
Good deal. All right, Anthony, close it out. Turn Up the Night.
All right. Apple actually has some interesting stuff on some of these songs, so I want to dive into that. But a little blurb from that Apple segment they got that says, for their second album with Dio and first with Apice, Vinny Apice, he'd been the drummer, right? Whatever, it's Saturday.
Yeah, right, it's the same. It's Italian, you should know this. Come on, man.
Sabbath built their own studio in Los Angeles, but it didn't work out as planned. It was disastrous, Iommi recalls with a laugh. We bought this bloody studio, put all the gear in, a $250,000 mixing desk, and fitted it out. We got in there to start playing it, and it was crap. We couldn't get a proper sound. So we end up going to the record plant, which was great. And it says below, Iommi comments on some of the key tracks from 81's Mob Rules. Turn Up the Night, he said this about it. We were getting more comfortable working with Ronnie, him being a very forceful singer. There's more attack, so my writing style changed up to this more attacking vibe. Really, Turn Up the Night was one of those that was a bit more aggressive, and then Ronnie would sing this great vocal to it. It all worked. So,
oh yeah.
So that was a pretty good little blurb from Apple. So,
these guys bought a fancy mixing board and just didn't use it. They just went to a different studio because it didn't sound good.
I mean, they were spending
a studio. They bought a studio and a $250,000 mixing board.
They were probably spending $300,000 on coke anyways back then.
That's what I was telling the boys earlier. There was a powder problem back in those days.
I'm sure there was. You know, I think it's a great way to lead an album in. It's a word, a phrase I coined this week called Sabbath Octane. And this is very much Sabbath Octane. I'm digging the song, the constant bass line, the vocals, the nasty guitar licks. I gave it an 8. Excellent tune, man.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's move this thing forward. We're going to go to the second track. It's called Voodoo. Hit it, Chris. So Voodoo, second song. This song is sneaky good. I think this song has a riff that gets in your head and it plays on and on. You'll find yourself after listening to this record, you'll hear that dun, 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 dun. It's just continually there for me. I don't know if I'd call it a sleeper because it's so good, because Sabbath played it live a lot. I don't think it was a single or nothing. So, as far as I can tell, they only had two singles from this record, and it was The Mob Rules and Turn Up the Night. But this song, so good. I mean, there's a simplicity and a heaviness of these notes that Tony's playing. Geezer's dropping a groovy bass line the entire time, keeping the song totally heavy. I mean, the solo actually reminds me of something Ace Frehley would have done back in the day of Kiss. I don't know if you guys could hear that, but it's definitely got a Kiss vibe to it. I mean, I don't know if it's the coming out of the 70s into the 80s type thing or what, but I love it. Yet again, another outstanding song. I gave this one a 9, probably my favorite song on this album. Jesse, what do you think about Voodoo?
Well, it's an interesting song to me. I mean, like that riff that it starts out with, like what you always hear me say, like, oh, that's a mean riff. This is like a menacing riff. Like I can hear this, like if you're walking down the street and some dude's like creeping up on you and you're like, is this dude going to like say hi to me or is he going to break a bottle over my head? Like I can hear that opening riff playing.
Oh my God.
That's a menacing riff. But I tell you, like Chris will probably disagree on this, but like the beginning of this song reminds me, like when I heard it, I was like, this reminds me of something else. But I think this might have been made before, like the song Mean Street by Van Halen. Yeah. Like the way it's kind of got that metallic sounding guitar, like at the very beginning intro, and then the way the drums break in, boom, 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 it's kind of very similar to how the song starts off. And the chorus kind of just is like kind of basically a sign of things to come with like Dio. You know, how like I mean, it's like a chorus from a Dio song. It's got that kind of driving sound, you know, so that's pretty cool. You know, I scored this one an 8. This is a really good song. And Jimmy's awesome. Right. That riff kind of like sticks in your head. So it's a really good song.
Killer riff. All right. Chris, what do you think about Voodoo?
Yeah, it's another one that I didn't realize. I listen to this in my truck a lot, you know, commuting and stuff for the past 2 weeks, but I didn't really give it a lot of headphone listens. And when I started doing that, I realized how much the bass stood out on this album. Oh, Lord. So yeah, like you said, man, got to give props to the bass on that. And I don't really have that in my notes a lot, but I'm hearing it now when I'm listening to it back. It's my favorite song on the album. I don't think there's any doubt. Like you guys said, that riff, unbelievable. It's just, and it's classic, man. You know, it's not that hard. It's not something complicated, but the best riffs are that way. They're not complicated. They're just perfect. The chorus on this one's very catchy. It's just like it's got swagger to it, man. And I think Tony's tone just phenomenal. I mean, that his tone, I don't know how he put it together. I don't know what his rig is, but he absolutely nails the tone. I got a feeling he's a perfectionist when it comes to that, because you don't get that tone by accident, I don't think. So yeah, I gave it a 9. It's an outstanding song.
So Tony used an amp called Laney Amps back in the day, and he was a Gibson SG user. So it's a Gibson. Okay. This is a British SG sound. So I mean, he absolutely rips it.
That's old. I mean, Angus Young.
Right? You think about it. What's Angus' tone sounds like versus what Tony Iommi's tone sounds like? I mean, it's crazy. And they basically, I mean, I think Angus uses Marshall, but nonetheless, killer tone.
He's got the SG.
Yeah, oh yeah, SG is for sure. Yeah, yeah. All right. Anthony, wrap up the Voodoo. What do you think?
Well, this is back to that Apple thing I was telling you about. This is what Iommi said, and it kind of goes back to the gear. Not the gear, but more the sound and the tone. He said, I had a slightly different sound on this solo, but I didn't sit down and work it out. If I tried them out, they never sound the same. So they were always off the cuff. Somebody like Brian May can play his solos all note for note, but I never really did that. I just do them as I felt them at the time. How I tended to do it in the studio was to get the actual vibe of the track and then try various solos. And usually it would be the first or second that we'd use. Otherwise, they tended to get too much routine and they get worse. So basically, he just sat down and just figured it out. The guy's nice. So talented. He's just like, yeah, just this sounds good. Let's just do this.
Yeah,
and then you get Voodoo. Can do it, man. Come on.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
You know, man, I love the groove of this one. Sounds like classic Sabbath in a lot of ways. It's a jam from start to finish. Dio's on point. Band is too. It's a 9, man. Outstanding tune. So,
Agreed. All right, let's go to track number 3, The Sign of the Southern Cross. Chris.
Love that doom sound.
There's a rainbow that will shimmer when the summer
Sign of the Southern Cross. I'm gonna go ahead and I know that this is gonna be a tough one for Chris Lister. It's the longest song on the album. So I'm sure he probably skipped this one quite a few times.
It is in my notes. No, I never skipped it.
All right. So first of all, we didn't catch this part, but I absolutely love the acoustic sounding opening of this song. And I noted this in my notes. It says, I know that the length of songs can really kill the mood in some cases, but once this monster starts up, it does not let up. Fantastic song from start to finish. There is a swirling sound that continues throughout the entire song that is an echo, eerie vibe that makes you feel like Ronnie James Dio is standing over top of a cliff looking over a lake and all this stuff is just going around him. He's conjuring up this evil music. I don't even know, dude. But I love it. I think this song is considered an epic by most Black Sabbath fanatics. I would agree with that. I think it's a must listen for any fan of metal or hard rock. This song sets the pace. All week I was torn between if I was going to give this thing a 9 or a 10, a 9 or a 10. You guys know how I like my epic songs. It's a 10 to me. I think this is absolutely a 10. Brother. This is an absolutely killer tune. All right, Jesse, what do you think about the Sign of the Southern Cross?
This is a cool song. Like the intro is not my thing, but it, like when the vocals kick in, it gives a kind of a chance to showcase, you know, Dio's vocals. So that's right. The upside of that. And the song is, it's long, and you know, it's, you know, a lot of people like myself have shorter attention spans. You know what I mean? There's a few long songs out there I like, but it's a short list. There are a few long songs that I can really just start to finish really love. But that riff, man, that is a sludgy, mean riff. Once it breaks in, I mean, it is grimy, and it's like it's like what you expect from Sabbath, except grimier and heavier, and almost as slow as some of the older stuff. So I mean, it's very sludgy. The drums, I mean, it's like very Bonham-esque. You know what I mean? It's just got boom. Boom, boom, you know, and the parts like in the verses and stuff, or the bridges and stuff where the guitar drops out some and you hear that kind of sound like you're talking about, Jimmy, like maybe that synthy kind of sound. Yeah, that's awesome too, but it showcases the drums real well. So I think the drums are great in this song. It's a little bit too long, but this is an awesome song, man. I gave it an 8, mostly just because there's a couple of spots where my eyes glazed over, you know, kind of at the beginning.
I understand.
But that riff, man, this riff sticks with you too. Yeah. This is a good one. It's grimy.
Not to cut you off, but what's the length on this one?
I think it's 7 minutes and change, ain't it? Yeah.
It didn't feel that long to me. It felt like 2 minutes to me when I was listening to this song.
I'm with you, Anthony. It doesn't feel long to me, but it's a
dude. I just listened to Rush's Caress of Steel album. Their closing song is 20 minutes long on that one.
Oh, Lord.
That's a fact, sir. That's a fact.
It's an amazing song, too.
What do you think about the Sign of the Southern Cross?
Well, I'll tell you, one of these days, we're going to review that Bitches Break. Brew by Coltrane. Yeah. It's got two songs on
it. Miles Davis, not Coltrane.
I'm sorry. You're right. Miles Davis.
How would you even review that?
I don't probably know.
You have to break it down in sections.
Yeah, I don't know how you do that. Okay, it is a long song, 7:46, and you guys know how I feel about long songs.
I do.
But I will say, you cannot deny, once this song kicks in, it is just badass. I mean, this is all there is to it. Ronnie's got kind of a theatric thing going on, which I like in music, man, when it's done right. Definitely we're traipsing through the Shire at the beginning of this thing.
Oh, stop it.
But, You know, it gives me kind of Iron Maiden vibes. They do that a lot. They traipse through the Shire and then they kick
in. I'd love to be in the Shire right now and with the hobbits. I would love to be there right now. It'd be so fun.
Drinking some mead. It'd
be fun.
I think I pulled the perfect part of that song because it shows why. I actually bumped this on I had a 7 written down originally. I was like, that was a better song than that. Well, like I said, I'm bumping it because it is a better song than that. But it's too long. So that's the reason it's not getting like a 9 for me. I'm giving it an 8. It is too long, dude. 7:46 is too long. I'm with Jesse. It pulls your, unless you're a diehard fan, it pulls your attention away, man. Yeah. You drift in a song this long.
I knew that was going to be Anthony, and I'll be honest with you. It's just not for Chris. The longer songs aren't for him, typically. That's I'm sure true. There's a few out there that he'd appreciate.
I'm glad Jesse said that because I'm not the only person that feels that way in this world. I know
you're not, but for somebody that has a passion and appreciates, like, I'm a pretty big Ronnie James Dio fan, and vocally – as well as what his bands have done throughout the years. I've been there. I've supported the, you know, the awesome years and the not so awesome years later in his career. So, you know, I get it. It's not for everybody, but I know Anthony appreciates stuff like this. I mean, I think that was the first song that he fired back at me after I selected this album. He's like, I forgot how awesome this was. And he's right. It's an awesome song. It's something
I went and looked at it and I was like, I see it's 10 minutes long. So there you go. That's
all right. Anthony, go ahead and summarize this the correct way, sir. Thank you.
Well, Iommi had this to say about the song. He said he had that sweet little voice for that acoustic part in the beginning. And then you come in with the riff and you get aggressive. It was a great approach. I really do like this song. But then I like 99% of all the stuff we do. From this period, the song Walk Away, I wasn't that mad about, but Sign of the Southern Cross felt really comfortable to me, and it's a powerful song. So, straight from Iommi's mouth. So, you know, it's a powerful song. Absolutely. You know, I do love this one, man. It's dark, it's brooding, it's ominous. Dia's voice just shines throughout. I do like that constant rhythm of that keyboard in the background, that flutter. It's so cool, man. This is a 10 for me, too, man. I think it's perfection. It's a favorite on the album. It's a favorite of mine by Black Sabbath. Probably a top 5, maybe top 10 Sabbath song for me. I've always loved this song.
Agreed.
And it gets even more dark in concert. Is this the one where he's talking about, he's talking to the crowd and he's like, an angel came down. He said, no, go away. I'm going to burn in hell with all of you. God, he does that in concert. Let's do the live version. God, I think it's this song where he does that.
But is
it's
that like on Live Evil? Is that what he does that on?
I think it's Live Evil where he's
or
like.
Or is it the Heaven and Hell version?
Of the two, but he has like a scene. He's talking about like the devil comes down, the angel comes down. Angel offers him heaven and paradise. He's like, nah. And the crowd just goes, erupts when he says, I'm going to burn in hell with you. So it gets even darker in concert. So,
Ronnie. Yeah. Good Lord.
Right. Awesome, too. 10, it's perfection.
I agree with you, man. It's one of those ones that grab you. And, you know, it's hard not to fanboy on this stuff when you're a fan guy. And I get it, but I think this is an epic perfection for the Sabbath gang. All right, guys. So for those who are following along, track 4 is E5150. It's actually not it's an intro track for The Mob Rules. So we're not going to rate that one per se. I kind of mixed my rating a little bit in with The Mob Rules. Probably shouldn't have, but I did. All right. So we're going to skip to The Mob Rules. Chris, hit it. So The Mob Rules. So as I said, I consider 5150 or E5150 to be the intro to this song. And Sabbath has been known to open their concerts with E5150 as they walk out. There's their bumper, if you will. It builds an eerie atmosphere if you listen to all 3 minutes of the song prior to getting into The Mob Rules. Does it fit? Maybe. Prior to our conversation today, we all kind of threw out there that maybe they should have started the album out with E5150 and went into The Mob Rules and kind of replaced Turn Up the Night toward the end. But nonetheless, I can't take anything away from The Mob Rules. I mean, this song, as soon as it starts, it rocks your soul, gets your head bobbing. The production is dirty. If you guys couldn't tell, it's a dirty produced song. There's noise going on in the background. That bass is just pummeling you if you put the headphones on. The riff, absolutely fantastic, just like all the previous songs that we've heard so far. This one is catchy, easy to sing along with. Another incredible song by the Sabbath Gang with Ronnie James Dio. Outstanding from start to finish. I gave this one a 9. Jesse, what do you think about The Mob Rules?
Man, this is a ripper right here. I mean, just right out of the gate with that riff. And then when it kicks in, you know, good, solid drumming. At some point, I don't know if it's the bass or the guitar. There's like even some horse gallops in this. And I think there's even in another song somewhere where that pops up again. So, I mean, kind of in those spots, kind of reminded me of Maiden, you know, like it's like some Iron Maiden songs in that area. I'm not a Maiden aficionado, but that's kind of like
these guys are.
Definitely. You know, this is kind of like in that vein, right? And it comes up some, you know, another point in this record too. I forget which song, but then like the chorus of this. I mean, this is just a ripper, man. The chorus is great. I gave this a 9. This is an awesome song.
Excellent. All right, Chris, what do you think about the Mob Rules?
Well, they definitely thought a lot of it. Whenever you name a, you know, your title track for your album, a song, it usually means the band is pretty proud of the song. You know, everything works on this song. Ronnie's vocals are on point. Like you said, Jesse, the way this thing starts and just takes off, man. It's just like from the jump, it's just like it's a rocker. Again, Tony with his guitar tone, man, that guy, he's just dialed that in perfectly. You can tell the guy's a perfectionist. Maybe that's why he's kind of viewed as a little hard to work with, because he's, you know, perfectionist can be, Eddie Van Halen is hard to work with. I mean, let's face it, man, like everything I've heard, the guy's had a hard time. Maybe it's more, man, I would jump down the Van Halen train there. You brought that up, Jesse, when you mentioned earlier in the night there, and honestly, I was for the longest time, I was like, this song reminds me of something, I can't figure out what it was. But like in that part where he's like, if you listen to Fools, isn't there like a Van Halen song that kind of has that same, you know what I'm talking about, Jimmy? Yeah, Fools. Yeah, Fools. That's it. Is there like about Women, Children or in that
yeah,
time
it's off
frame?
Of,
yeah,
Women and Children. That's exactly where it comes from.
Yeah, for the whole time, I was like, man, that reminds me of something I can't put my finger on. I think that was it. I give it an 8. It's a great song. Yeah.
Awesome. That's actually called Excellent, but yes, we'll take that.
Excellent. Right. Sorry, I don't have those written beside me.
Yeah, whatever. All right, Anthony, talk to me about the Mob Rules.
This will impress you guys. Iommi said in about the Mob Rules, he said, this was the first song we wrote for the album. We actually did it for the movie Heavy Metal. We wrote and recorded it in a couple of days. So it was the first song we'd done with Vinny and the band. It really sparked us what we were going to do with the album. So that was the title track, and off we went. But it's a great, forceful track, just heads down and off you go. So wrote it in a couple of days, and it was the first one they did. So that's probably why it sounds a little raw and maybe a little bit noisy.
Dirty. I just think I love it. I think it's a perfect tone. Perfect tone for them.
Yeah, you know, I wrote it. It's energetic, upbeat. It's filled with that Sabbath octane again. It's vocals, guitars, drums. It works, man. I gave it a 9. Outstanding on this one, too. So
absolutely. Absolutely. And so this album flips over. That's the last track on side one. We go to side two. It opens up with a song called Country Girl. Hit it, Chris. Country Girl, starting off side two, super strong. I think this song is possibly considered underrated in a lot of circles. I think it could possibly be a sleeper in this album as well. The more you listen, the more that riff gets stuck in your mind. Humming along, singing along. The transitions are fantastic in this song. Almost trance-like music. The guitar work, fantastic. Ronnie's voice, absolutely on point. I love the guitar solo. It's quicker on this one, but to the point and so tasty. I mean, the drum tone and the standout performance toward the end of the song, my God, dude. Vinny Appice's on fire at the end of this tune. I mean, overall, I think the song is excellent. Excellent way to start the second side out. I gave this one an 8. Jesse, what do you think about Country Girl?
This is a cool song. It's not my favorite, but I do, like, the drumming in the song is really solid. Like, everything's solid. I mean, it's Sabbath. Everything's going to be solid, obviously. But the drumming in this kind of stands out. He kind of goes in. And on the down, it hits the China Crash every single time before that first verse. And that kind of cuts through everything. And that sounds awesome. The drum fills are really awesome in the song. The riff's cool. you know, you guys probably gonna disagree. I come in a little low on this. I gave it a 6. It's still a good very song. Good. Like, yeah. Sabbath really don't make terrible songs.
That's very good.
You know? That's very good. There's yeah. no shame in that. So,
it's a cool song, but for me, like, Vinny's drumming stands out in this song, and it kind of cuts through the mix a little bit when he hits those cymbals like that with the China crashes and stuff. But it is a cool riff. It is a good song, but yeah, I give it a 6.
Fair enough. Chris, what'd you think about Country Girl?
Yeah, to me, the riff really stands out on this song. I think maybe it's the second best riff on the album behind Voodoo, personally. I think that, at least it got stuck in my head. I don't know if I should say the second best riff on the album, but it definitely got stuck in my head. And like you said, Jimmy, they hit you right in the face with it immediately. It's not something you got to wait 2.5 minutes to listen to, you know?
Right.
Instrumentally, this is superior. Like you guys mentioned, Vinny, he sounds great. The rhythm section in general sounds phenomenal on this song. I was thinking this was my sleeper. It's between this or another one. But, man, that groove in this song, that's something that sticks with you after you listen to it. I gave it 7.5.
Fair enough.
Solid 2, yeah.
Anthony, bring us home with Country Girl. What do you think?
Songfacts.com. It goes, wait, is this Black Sabbath? The Metal Trailblazers famous for War Pigs and Iron Man? Singing about falling in love with a country girl in her morning sunshine? It is indeed. Country Girl is part of Mob Rules, the second album, of course, the group recorded with Dio, who is a lot more likely to write a lovey-dovey lyric than his predecessor, Ozzy Osbourne. Sharon! Anyways, his bandmates put up resistance, but decided to go with it. Country Girl was one that did cause a bit of a problem, guitarist Omi said in a Song Facts interview. We started playing the riff and wrote the whole thing, and then Ronnie sang this melody about a country girl. I thought, that's a weird thing to sing about. Geezer Butler and I didn't agree with it, and Ronnie went, what's wrong with it? It sounded a bit odd, really, him singing about a country girl. The lyric is atypical, but the guitar riff is distinctly Sabbath. Most of their songs started with Omi playing riff after riff, until his bandmates stopped him down when they heard one they liked. He could keep playing and didn't always know which ones were good. So I thought that's kind of interesting because it really is kind of an odd subject for Sabbath. But honestly, man, I don't know why this one never stood out to me all that much. But on these listens, this song has been blowing up my stereo. Nice. I mean, I just love the way this one grooves. You get that nasty Sabbath vibe. Dio showcases his range like nobody's business on this one. Tony on guitar, Geezer on bass, you know, and the drums are just fire. I mean, this is a 9 for me, man. This is outstanding. This is a sleeper hit for me this week. So really, really digging this one. Killer, I'm surprised like a country artist hadn't grabbed this one yet and tried to turn it into something. I can see Morgan Wallen bringing his talent up a little bit, trying to do this song.
Hardy would be the one. Maybe Ernest, one of those two, could probably cover this. But I'd like Morgan to pull this one off. That'd be hilarious.
Sure,
if he did.
Love that with me.
All right, let's go to track number 7. It's called "Slipping Away." Hit it, Chris. So for Slipping Away, I think it's a fantastic riff opening. The guitar sound is almost foretelling of what's getting ready to come up in the 80s. This is 81. And what's getting ready to happen is 80s metal, and it's about to explode. I think this riff would certainly fill that air just fine. This riff actually reminds me of Slide It In by Whitesnake, which comes out 3 years later. I think that it's absolutely very, very foretelling of what's getting ready to happen.
What's the matter? What's the matter, Chris?
Chris is laughing.
That's an insult to Sabbath, man. Come on.
No, it's not. I mean, Iommi is formulating what's getting ready to happen in the 80s, and this is kind of like the precursor to that. Yeah, the transition, the chorus in this song is really what sells it to me. The guitar solo and bass solo trade-off was a nice touch later in the tune, and it adds a different feeling toward the end of the song. Man, this one's a catchy song. I think it's a great tune. I gave it a 7. Jesse, what'd you think about Slipping Away?
This is one that caught me off guard. You know, you're just kind of listening to this album, and there's elements of like the old Sabbath, like hard driving stuff with some new stuff thrown in. And then this, I mean, it's, I don't throw it out there. I mean, everybody's probably thinking it's similar to Zeppelin in the rhythm. Yes. I mean, so obvious, you know, kind of similarities to a Zeppelin song. The drums are big. Kind of got a booming sound. The big thing with this, what makes the sound stand out, is like the syncopation in the drums. It's not just a straight rhythm like most songs are. You know what I mean? Sabbath has always had like really awesome drum fills, but everything is still just kind of on the 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yep.
This kind of strays from that, and it's awesome. The fills are great in this. Like Vinny kills it in this, and it showcases his drums. The chorus, I love the chorus. The chorus is almost like either a throwback to 70s rock or a sign of what's to come for like 80s rock, Jimmy's talking about that. I didn't really think about it like that, but you're dead on. And then the dueling guitar and bass, that was awesome. Killer, and the distortion on the bass when they do that. Like, I love that part. Yes. That was awesome. I gave this one a 10. This one snuck up on me. Wow. I like this song a lot. Yes.
Snuck up on me too.
I mean, I figured you guys would be like, nah, 10. Yes, a
dude,
10.
That's killer, man. Killer. I'm glad you love it. That's awesome. Sometimes it hits you just right. That one hits you just right. That's killer. Yep. All right, Chris, what'd you think about Slipping Away?
Doesn't surprise me, Jesse. I know you've drummed before in bands and stuff, so that makes sense that you would like this song that much. Because I feel like if anything, this is Vinny's like best song on the album. And it's like you said, it's due to the time signature. You basically said all my notes, so I'm just going to kind of like reiterate what you said. I didn't give it 10, but I do. It's not a straightforward song, man. It's that, like you said, everything's on the 1, 2, 3, 4. It's not like that on this. And it does have like a Zeppelin feel to it, very much like a Bonham kind of sound to it on the drums. I love the dueling bass and guitar solos on that, you know, I guess with Geezer and Tony kind of like playing off on each other on that. That sounds great. And the chorus is a standout on this song. I give it an 8, man. I think it's a really good song, and kind of like I was between this and Country Girl for my sleeper. I think the riff on Country Girl is more, you know, more of a solid riff, but I really like some of the things they're doing on this song that are unusual for this album. I don't know if it's like Sabbath unusual just in general, but that whole time signature thing, the way that they're doing it on this song is just different than anything else. And I like those dueling guitar / bass on the solo too. So yeah, I give it 8.
Excellent. Excellent. All right, Anthony, Slipping Away.
This has like a great classic rock vibe, kind of like what Jesse was saying. It reminds me of something Ronnie did with like Elf or Rainbow back in the day. Kind of one of those songs.
Yeah, I can see that.
That's what it kind of sounded like to me. It's not my most popular one on the album, but I do like it. I gave it a 7. It's a great tune. I do like that bass guitar solo kind of playing off each other. That's really cool.
Killer, man.
So, yeah. So I give it a 7. Great tune.
All right. Let's move it up to track
number
8.
I'm a little surprised, Anthony. I thought with the prominence of the bass, and I know how much you like bass, I figured you'd get a little higher on this one, man.
I don't know.
I know,
man,
what you're saying, Anthony. In my ears, there's so much more greatness, and it's hard to give it a higher score when you've got all these other ones. Like the first side is almost.
Yeah, I was so high on the other side, then I kind of this side. I kind of noticed a couple of the songs that were a little lower, but listening to it now, I probably should have gone maybe a notch higher on it, because I was listening now going, why did I give this a 7 again?
It's just in your back of your mind, you're probably doing the justification like I was doing. I was like, God, I've killed this album, just blasting it with killer scores. And then I'm like, well, this one's not as strong as The Mob Rules, or it's not as strong as
right,
Santa Cross, you know, and that's what I was trying to bounce back and forth. But it's a killer, dude. 7's not a bad score. Keep that in mind. That's great.
It is great.
God,
it's not for Anthony, but it is for everybody else. Well, yeah, it's like an insult for Anthony.
It's such a smack in the
7. What the hell, man? Why are you giving it a 7 for?
It's unlistenable. Oh my God. All right, let's go to track number 8. It's called Falling Off the Edge of the World. So this song is one of those ones that in my ears tricks you. It tricks you a little bit. So it starts off a little bit slow. And if the intro is very slow, it makes you believe you're going to get a little bit of a more somber tune, so to speak. And I love how the guitar effects are played on this with the chorus and a light phaser going on. It adds a feeling to that intro that's just, wow. Like I said, initially you're led to believe this is going to be maybe something disappointing compared to what we have been listening to all the way up to this point. But man, this somberness actually leads you on a journey, and when this song kicks in, the riff almost becomes non-Iommi-like. It's faster than most things he's ever played before, and it's nonstop. It's an absolute incredible riff. The solo that he has in this song, not only is it frantic, it's one of the longest on the album, if not the longest, not including the next song, which has two solos, but it's probably the longest solo on the album. I think this song could almost qualify as a sleeper as well, because it's a deception in how this song turns out toward the end. I mean, this song is absolutely outstanding. It's the strongest track on the second side in my ears.
I gave this one a nine.
Really?
God. So. Yeah, it's the strongest song on the second side. Absolutely. It's got an epicness to it. Not quite as good as The Sign of the Southern Cross. But this is an epic song. It's a journey, man. It's just a journey.
Actually, right,
Jesse, what'd you
Country
think
Girls
about?
On yeah, sorry. That. Sorry, poor Jesse.
Country Girls on the second side. It is.
Oh, so that's the strongest song for me on Country Girl. I forgot that was on this side too.
Yeah,
Country Girl in this one. So,
oh, dude, I love this song. God, I love this song. All right, Jesse, what'd you think about Falling Off the Edge of the World? Yeah, keep me in check.
This is a pretty good song. Like it kind of starts out kind of slow, and it's, you know, not exactly my thing. It don't have to be, I don't know. It's just kind of slow, mellow. It's not bad or anything like that, but it's kind of lower in energy. And then I think there's a part that kind of, it's like a kind of a heavier part, but it's real short, kind of a sludgy part. And then it breaks into like what we were just listening to, like from the clips there. Yeah. And that one, it's kind of what I was talking about earlier, like kind of, there might be some horse gallops in there, and it's got that high energy. You know, you can imagine some dude, you know, some Prussian soldier, you know, riding with a sword, getting ready to like gut somebody, you know. It kind of sounds like Maiden-esque, you know what I mean, when it gets into it. That solo was awesome. You know, like I said, I kind of like that upbeat, you know, when it gets to the end with the horse gallops and all that, the, you know, high energy stuff. But I gave it a 7. It's not my favorite song, but it's still, you know, a really good song with awesome solo and some really good guitar work.
Killer. I mean, the guitar work is what sold me on it, man. It's what sold me on it. Score's wrong, but it's okay. We'll allow it. All right, Chris,
you got to have outliers.
Yeah, I know. What do you think about Falling Off the Edge of the World? Oh my God.
Get off it, Chris.
Get the hell out of here.
Jeez Louise. You did that on purpose, didn't you?
You mother.
If you say that intro is too slow for you, we're not friends anymore.
That intro is too slow for me. Oh, 2 minutes in, hell? And it finally kicks
that
in.
But intro, look,
this
is like,
not,
that
this
intro is
not
like a
Southern Cross,
hey,
dude.
That
this
intro
is
like a horror movie, man. I love it. I love it so much because it's just like a doomy horror movie, man.
All right.
Let's hear this disappointing
look,
review.
The intro goes on too long, and this song is not as good as Son of the Southern Cross. It's not.
It's not.
I don't care what
you guys
say. I
didn't say it was.
There's two songs that have that stupid long intro that goes on too long, and this is one of them, and it's not as good. And like Jesse said, like, you know, it's I'm not that kind of guy either. I don't like that kind of stuff. I don't think there's a really good standout chorus in this song, unlike Sign of the Southern Cross. That one had grit to it and just fist pumping. It's fast. It has a gallop. I know you guys like these damn songs that feel like they belong on Broadway or something, and that's what this is. But I mean, that's, to me, I prefer like a song with a solid riff that doesn't take all day and just gets to the point. And that's not this. I gave it 5.5. I think it's the worst song on the album.
God. All right, Anthony. Please, falling off the edge of the world.
Well, Mr. Iommi is going to disagree with you big time when I give you this apple blur.
Well, he's wrong. He's a self... what's it, these people all like right. to pump themselves up.
Getting a little blasphemous.
He's a little too important.
He could be on the Mount Rushmore of guitarist in metal right there. So I'm just saying. He's
good.
Watch your tone.
Perfectionist. Go ahead.
That's what Iommi said about falling off the edge of the world. I love doing this one because I could experiment. I got this violin sound at the beginning, and I never been able to get it again. He said I had this little gadget in the studio, this little booster, and I just overloaded everything, and people thought it was a violin. So it's not actually a violin at the start of this song. So anyways, I thought that was kind of interesting. But
I agreed. I didn't realize that it was a violin tone as well. I just thought it was kind of acoustic vibe to it, so that's killer.
Yeah. You know, I personally enjoy the buildup in this song. The way it starts out so gloomy and doomy, ominous and eerie, evokes images of red skies and black lightning bolts, man. It's just very horror-esque. You know, I love it. It's so good. I really like when Dio takes his vocals low and brings in that darker sound, too. That's pure metal right there. And when this song decides to crank, it cranks. No issues, man. It's an 8. It's an excellent tune. And with Chris's nonsense, I probably should have given it a freaking 10.
It's not perfection, but it's darn good. Yeah,
it's an awesome tune, man. I mean, I get if you're not into this kind of stuff, like I said,
the guitar solo stood out. I mean, it was I agree with Jimmy on that. Everything else did not work for me.
It just has that great horror vibe at the start, and I love horror stuff. So when you get to capture that horror in a song, for me, I'm just like, oh. It gives me the total feels, man. So I love it. So,
like yeah. I said, man, I've said it a million times. It's on how you hear it. I figured Chris would probably kill the Southern Cross as well, but you know what?
Nah, that one rocked too much, man. I couldn't. I didn't care for that intro, but it rocked too much.
I think I'm changing my pick to Caress of Steel then. 5 songs, 42 minutes. Let's do it.
Chris will never make it through.
You're taking my place on that one, Jess.
Oh, my God. Lord, how much. All right, let's go to the final song on this album. It's called Over and Over. Hit it, Chris. So we're closing out this record with, honestly, it's slow. It's doomy-ass Sabbath that they have been famous for so many years. Slowest song on the record. Vocally, Ronnie puts it all on the line, and he just closes the album out with a very powerful vocal performance. Tony, he absolutely delivers another incredibly fitting guitar solo, and the outro solo is as good as the solo in the song. I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, and his riffs on this solo are just, it's like a blues based pentatonic. I mean, it's absolutely, it's bliss. I mean, sadly, this song doesn't stand out to me as well as the rest of the songs on this album do. And this would have been my flush, and because it's my lowest score of the night. And I think because of the slowness, maybe that's what it suffers. As I've said in the past, I like a little bit more of a rocking tune to go out on. Something a little bit more fast-paced, something that makes me want to yearn for more on the next album. Although I still yearn for more, this is just not the one that grabs me the most. And I will. This is not a bad song by no means. It's still very good. I'm at a 6. That's where I stand on this one. I think it's a very good way to close it. That's about it for me. Jesse, what do you think about Over and Over?
Well, I mean, I like the like the bass lines, like the bass runs that I guess was it Geezer Brothers still on this record, right? Yeah, and the solos are good, but I mean, for me, it's just. It's like when it started out kind of that slow drive, I was like, all right, that's cool. And I was just kind of just left me waiting the whole time for some really, really grinding, sludgy riffs that never really, you know, come to light. You know what I mean? So I kind of just waited the whole time to hear something like that. And the song just kind of meanders and meanders. And, you know, it's like a stream that just winds and winds and, you know, don't make it to the ocean. You know what I mean? It's it's not a bad song, but I gave this one a 4, you know, not to be harsh, but
wow,
I mean, it's just kind of
kicking the balls.
Yeah. I mean, good, you know, God. Again, it's still Sabbath. It's still good, but I mean, it's just
that's
not my favorite
good.
On this album. It suffers by comparison. I mean, it really
does,
what it is.
It
suffers by comparison to a lot of the songs on this album, you know, or suffers by comparison. Yeah. So,
oh boy, this is about to get ugly. Chris, what'd you think about Over and Over?
You know, we talk a lot about the way that end a song on an album, like how it goes out, because this is important the way you book in an album. I think
I
agree. This one to me, it feels a little bit like a slowed down version of the song Heaven and Hell. I don't know if you guys caught that at all. Like I feel like it's kind of got the same structure to it. It's just it's not as fast, and it's a bluesy song, and it's two really long jam sessions in there. Like you said, I think basically ends in a jam session. Which I'm not opposed to. I actually think that's not bad. So I don't know. I was kind of torn on this one. I didn't really know. I like the bluesy sound that Tony's got on his guitar work there. I gave it 7. I don't think it's that bad. You guys are kind of tearing it apart. I don't think it's that bad.
Six is three. No. Now, Jesse, on the other hand, he absolutely flawed it. That's okay.
But, like, and I get what you mean. If you're wanting, they kind of change it up a little bit. And it's, like I say, it's more bluesy, which I tend to kind of lean into. So I don't mind that. It doesn't, like, rock like the rest of the album does for sure. So I can get why y'all think that too. But yeah, I'm going 7 with it.
All right, Anthony, final thoughts on Over and Over.
Yeah, I give it a 7 too. It's a great tune, but it's not an album closer. It should be in the middle of the album somewhere, probably. I think it should have closed with Falling Off the Edge of the World or Turn Up the Night. Maybe they Turn Up the Night right here or something like you guys were saying, maybe. But
well, couldn't agree more.
It's just not a way to close an album out. But it's still a solid tune. It's just, it's like all the pieces are there. Dio sounds amazing. The guitar sound amazing. Everything else sounds good. It's just like the song itself doesn't congeal as good as some of the other ones do. But I still give it a 7. Still think it's a great tune. You know, I'm not
all right. Yes, it is out of place. You're absolutely right, Anthony. It's out of place. Yeah. Listen to this. I know we talked about putting E-5150 at the first of the album and following up with Mob Rules. What if you closed out the album with E-5150 and going into the Mob Rules?
It'd be a skip every time if they closed with that, man.
Nah, dude, that song rocks too much. I don't know, man. I don't know.
What, but E-5150? If you closed with that, I would totally skip
time. No, that would be track 8, and track 9 would be the Mob Rules.
Oh, I got you.
Okay. You see what I'm saying? Because it's closing out the album. You hear that all of a sudden you hear like, what's going on here? Eerie, eerie. And then they blast into the Mob Rules. And you're like, holy crap, what's coming next? That's kind of how I would have liked to sing that.
Or you could have done E-150 at the start, or like to start the second side, one of the two, you know, back in the day. You know, you could have flipped it over and had Mob Rules on the opening the second part with E-5150.
Yeah. Over and over should have closed out the first side. Just
should have
been the last
out,
song on the first album. Or first song,
something like it. It should have been somewhere in the middle, somewhere, you know. So,
all right. But. So, I'm gonna give you some final thoughts. I cut these down pretty quick because I know we have an extra guest this week. So, I will say this: I was late to the Mob Rules party when I was a kid. For some reason, I skipped this album. It got by me. No clue why. But once again, just like the review we did for Heaven and Hell a couple years back, I'm gonna give props to my cousin Hank because he had this in his record collection. I remember hanging out with his younger brother Willie, my other cousin. And we were listening to these Sabbath records back in those days, you know, in early high school, seventh, eighth grade, ninth grade. And I'm just amazed at how heavy and how great these albums. And this is weird, but to say this, Sabbath, fronted by Ronnie James Dio, was my introduction to, you know, basically Sabbath back in 81, 82, 83, in those years. Because I didn't, you know, Ozzy was out there, but he was a solo artist at the time, and I really hadn't gone back. And I'll be honest with you, I'm a fan of the Sabbath that's fronted by Ronnie James Dio much more than the Ozzy. Ozzy has his place on Mount Rushmore, don't get me wrong, but I've always been a fan of the Dio-fronted Sabbath stuff. And I think this album's stellar. I think Heaven and Hell's stellar. I think this is something worth going back and listening to if you guys are not familiar with these years of Sabbath. Absolutely recommend listening to this. Overall, came to be an 8.4. It's high for me, but I absolutely will stand by that score. 8.4 is my final. Jesse, what are your final thoughts?
Nice. You know, I mean, I know this is, you know, an audio-based podcast, and we're talking about the music and stuff like that, but I got to throw out the album cover is killing one me. Of the – it's an unsettling album
it's
cover.
Dark, yes.
And yes. As a kid, you know, I'd heard, like, Paranoid, Iron Man, stuff like that, either from the radio or from some mixtapes, you know, that my parents had. And that was kind of my intro to Sabbath. But there was a guy on my street that – he lived beside my grandmother. He was my parents' age, and my parents knew him. And I would go out there and set up my drums, and we were in like a classic rock cover band when I was a kid, because drummers are obviously hard to find when you're letting like a 10-year-old play for your band. But anyway, he had his record crates in his shed, in his stereo, and I'd flip through them. And that one was just one. I would see that and be like, what? Like, I didn't know what was on the record, man. I expected it to be a much grimmer sound,
satanic,
you know what
stuff.
I mean?
Yeah,
because that's a creepy album cover, but it's really well done. Dio's vocals are awesome. I mean, Vinny Appice's was an awesome drummer and great choice for this. And I guess he went on to be on all the Dio albums, from what I understand. I don't listen to a whole lot of Dio. You know, like we talked about earlier, like the song orders and the sequencing and stuff like that is kind of, you know, to us, you know, to our ears, could have went, you know, a different way. But it's just an awesome album, man. Yeah. Like, you've kind of got it all. You've got stuff that reflects on the old Sabbath-y sounding stuff. You've got them kind of finding a new sound and kind of getting themselves up to speed with the 80s. You know what I mean? And kind of foreshadowing what's to come with 80s rock. And they also just had some, like, you know, kind of like I said, like Slipping Away is one I didn't expect to throw back to a more classic rock sound. So this album's kind of got it all, man. You know, I really like it. So overall, I gave it, you know, it's like 7.8. I would round that up to a solid 8 for sure.
Very good. I want to touch on your album cover. You know, there's hidden messages all over this album. Ozzy written in blood. Did you know that Ozzy's written in blood on this?
I did not.
Yeah,
really?
Dude. It's
on the
bottom
cover?
On the sidewalk. Yeah, it's nasty.
Oh, wow.
It's nasty. Yeah, I mean, this album cover is just dirty. Like you said, you know what? We really don't talk about that stuff a lot because we really don't have a video going with this stuff. But it's just a dirty album. I've got the vinyl, man, and it's actually, when you can get that in your hands, you can look at it. It's just amazing. Artwork is so underrated this day and time, because back in those days, it was everything. It's what sold a record back in those days. A lot of times, people be at a record store flipping through and be like, oh my God, this album looks killer. I'm going to get it. And it'd probably be some kind of garbage, but you're like, the album cover's awesome. So, but this album is the exception to the rule. It's a killer album cover and killer record. All right, Chris, what are your final thoughts?
Yeah, it makes sense that you were talking about how you didn't really, your intro to Sabbath was Ronnie James. Because, I mean, you know, when you're like single digits, you know, when you're 5 or 6 years old, you're not going to be listening to Sabbath.
Well,
and
true.
Back,
true.
You know, like now we would say, okay, you find somebody you like and you see, okay, well, let's listen to a discography on Spotify or something. Back then, you had to go buy the albums. When you were a kid, right. You probably couldn't afford to buy but one or two albums at a time, you know, so it makes sense. Yeah, Jim is a good pick. I enjoyed listening to it, honestly. I've learned one thing about Sabbath. These guys are all tremendous musicians. I mean, they really are. Tony and Geezer, I guess they, like I said, kind of founded the band. They play well off each other. They do. And it's bass-driven music. And Vinny was a nice addition to this band. I'm not sure who the original drummer was. They probably went through a few.
Bill Ward okay. was there from the beginning.
This guy did a great job on this album. I thought the drums stood out a lot. And I liked it. You know, like you said, it's almost Zeppelin-esque at times. And I agree. I really enjoyed the one song. What was it? Slipping Away there. Yeah, I think the time signature on that, the way that does. I didn't write this down. I was thinking about this while we were doing the podcast. you guys, I've noticed, like these epic, like kind of tunes. You know what I mean? That's like your thing, and that's probably why you like certain songs. It's okay sometimes. It just depends on my mood, I guess. But that's not always what I like. I like more like the bluesy kind of sounds to stuff when they can throw it in that direction. That's probably why I thought the closer was pretty decent and everybody else seemed to kind of trash it a little bit. But overall, yeah, Tony Iommi is a tremendous guitarist. I can't disagree with that. He probably is on that Mount Rushmore. His tone always stood out to me on every one of these songs. I feel like if there's such a thing as a drum tone, I don't know, but I really thought the drummer, like he just, the sound he produced with his kit there sounded great. This stuff's theatric at times. It definitely, you know, I will say this, anybody that listens to this show is probably going to be like a Gen X guy. I'd say, and I would say absolutely, you're going to like this music if you listen to it. It's one of these things I would recommend. Anybody that listens to this podcast is probably going to enjoy this album. So it's something I wouldn't hesitate to recommend to people. My score, when I rounded it up, and I bumped this a little bit because there were a couple songs I was low on. 7.5 is where I'm going with this. And I feel like, you know, that's between great and excellent. I think that's a pretty fair rating for this album.
Fair enough. All right, Anthony, what are your final thoughts, man?
I mean, you guys kind of said it all. So, I mean, I agree with what y'all said. You know, I've never heard Dehumanizer, which was the other one that he did with this band. So I don't know if it's very good or not. It's early 90s. So, but I do know the two albums we've done and he did with them are excellent metal albums. So highly recommend both of them, and especially this one too. So yeah, my final rating was an 8.4 between outstanding and excellent. So, you know. Same thing.
All right, guys. Well, that was a fun listen. We have got a couple things going on. Anthony, you got a pick.
I do.
Let me play the tune.
Hit it.
And in this corner, weighing in at approximately 180 pounds, the Ace of Apex, the Italian Stallion, the Ballad Boy, it's Anthony with his Pick of the Week.
And honestly, I'm still torn about what to pick.
Oh, no.
It's time to shit it off the pot, brother. Man.
Well, I was thinking Whitesnake's Slip of the Tongue, the next one after their 87 album. But Chris was like, I don't know if I want to do juvenile music again.
I don't know. It's just so many sexual innuendos with those guys. It's over. It's like hit you in the face with it. You know, it's just too much, man. But go ahead. Like, that's a good album. I'm familiar with that album. So if you want to do that, go ahead.
Well, I was also thinking Death Leopard too. On Through the Night, which is one of my favorite album covers of all time. I love that album cover. Or then Chris said about Hysteria because we didn't pull it out of that Verses. So I'm torn between those three right now. Do we dive deeper into Hysteria? Try the One Through the Night, which you guys probably haven't heard as much as I have, or Slip of the Tongue, which would you guys prefer to dive into if you had a pick of those three?
I would prefer On Through the Night simply because I don't know it as much as the other two.
Yeah, that's part of the new wave of British heavy metal too, that On Through the Night album.
It's probably a better album too.
I'm good either way you want to go. I'm a fan of all three of those albums, and I am pretty versed with the On Through the Night because my Def Leppard days started with Pyromania, and I went backwards. Mine. So yeah, you know,
that's the way I was. I had Pyromania was actually my first cassette years ago. The first thing I really bought.
My first cassettes as well. Yeah, back '83 or something. Yeah.
Well, let's go with On Through the Night then. Death Leopard, On Through the Night. There's Waste that's on there. Hello America's on there. Rock Brigade's on there. I mean,
Rock Brigade, killer.
It's just. Turn the volume up on that one, man. It pumps, man. It's a great album. So
it'll be a good one, man. It's definitely going to be a good listen.
And like I said, album covers, that's one of my favorites by them. One of my favorites all time. I always just love that semi-truck floating above the earth with that guitar on the back of it. It's such a cool-looking album cover, man. So, yeah.
Good Lord. All right. Go with that one. So before we cut loose, Anthony, what do you got going on this week, man? New podcast? You got to work on one.
Songlines of Tan Lines. Actually, the song Voodoo might appear on the next episode of Songlines and Tan Lines because I started thinking about really? Jimmy Buffett's got some voodoo songs. Kenny Rogers has that voodoo song that I enjoyed. Like, maybe I could do an episode about voodoo and throw some Buffett tunes in, throw this song in, throw Kenny Rogers in. Nice little hodgepodge there. So
that's kind of where, man.
I also got the Dave Matthews listener supported halfway written, but I'm kind of losing interest in it.
As will happen. Yes.
Easily done. Yeah.
It's like, I enjoy listening to his music, but I'm not sure I want to dive into his music. But I'm still playing it. I just dropped one with Adam from Under 40's Victims of Fate podcast. In case Jesse doesn't know, Under 40, something Buffett says in one of his songs, I'm an Under 40 victim of fate. So these guys are in their 20s. So they make an Under 40 Victims of Fate podcast. So that's why they did it. So anyways, so that conversation's up now if you want to go listen to it. We talked about Buffett and underrated albums and should the Reefers tour again, that kind of stuff. So.
Well, McAnally's touring again.
He's
coming to Bristol.
Coming up here.
He's good, man. McAnally's good. He sounds good doing Bubbles Up, too. I heard him do Bubbles Up recently. He sounds really good on it. So.
All right. Well, guys, I say, first of all, Jesse, thanks for joining us. First episode or first review of the year. We appreciate your insight, your review skills, and, of course, your taste in music and a lot of things. We hope you join us again. I know you fill in for us whenever one of us goes away. So we love it, and thank you so much for joining us today, man. Short notice. I know. I think you only had a week, didn't you? But still.
Yeah, in about 2 weeks, I think.
Oh, you gave him the full time? All right. That's awesome.
Pretty early on. Because I knew, like, when we did Heaven and Hell, he had commented how much he enjoyed that album. I was like, next time we do Sabbath, I'll let you that's awesome, know, man. Give you a heads up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's fun.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. All right, guys. So for the Audible Ecstasy podcast, this is Jimmy.
This is Chris.
This is Anthony.
This is Jesse.
And this is it.